Nerd. Learn.
Hello, and welcome to Our Weird World. I am your host, John Henson. Now, if you've been listening for any amount of time, you know that I sound very different right now. And that's because there's a baby sleeping in the next room, and I don't want to wake him up because he's only sleeping for like 30 minutes anyway, and he just fought this nap for the past 4 hours. So there's a decent chance that this NPR calmness that you hear right now will not last this entire episode, but we're going to just get this recording in and see how it goes. Today on the show, we're talking about prison escapes. I have three stories for you. They are the tales of Pascal Payet, Radovan Krejcir, and our first story of the Briley Brothers. Linwood James Jr. and Anthony Briley were born in the 1950s in Richmond, Virginia. After their parents got divorced and their mother moved away, the boys lived in general fear of their father, who padlocked his bedroom door from the inside every night to do all sorts of horrifying things. Probably. I don't know what they are. No one really thought to include that detail. The boys also collected exotic pets such as tarantulas, boa constrictors, and piranhas. How do you obtain a piranha in Virginia in the 1950s? That's just wild to me. Despite that, the boys, they had a good reputation in the neighborhood and often helped their neighbors with yard work or car repairs. Well, on January 28, 1971, 16-year-old Linwood shot his neighbor, Orlean Christian, with a rifle from his bedroom window. Why did he do that? That's a great question. We don't know. And there aren't really any reasons given in any of the sources. Initially, people thought Orlean had basically just up and died, and it wasn't until the viewing at the wake that relatives actually noticed a small blood mark under her armpit. After having the funeral director take a second look at the body, they then found the bullet wound from where Linwood had shot her. Detectives quickly went to work trying to recreate the shooting and determined that the shot had in fact come from the Briley house. Linwood quickly admitted to shooting her and added that she knew that she, quote, had heart problems, she would have died soon anyway. That's the spirit. Linwood was then sent to a reform school to serve a one-year sentence, which is pretty light for a black guy in the 1970s, if I'm being honest. Probably because Orlean was also black, and so they didn't really care. His brother, James Jr., followed in his footsteps when he tried to kill a police officer during a pursuit. By 1979, all three of the Briley brothers had killed random people without any real clear motive. Together with their friend, Duncan Eric Meekins, the brothers started by attacking William and Virginia Bucher. Linwood held the couple at gunpoint while Meekins tied the couple up and the other brothers doused the house in kerosene. After tossing a lit match on the fuel, the boys looted the house and left the Buchers to die. Fortunately, Meekins didn't tie them tight enough and the couple escaped before the house burned down. Over the next 7 months, the boys killed 12 people in a variety of ways. Some were shot, one had his head smashed with a cinder block, another was beaten with a baseball bat. One person was stabbed with knives, scissors, and a fork. Following their final attack, responding officers who had heard the Brileys' gunshots soon saw the gang running at full speed down the street. Although they weren't arrested at the time, they were quickly captured after the bodies were found. Meekins quickly took a plea deal and confessed everything that the Brileys had done, even though Meekins was very much an active participant in all of the raping and shooting that took place against some of those victims. Under this agreement, though, Meekins avoided the death penalty and was instead given a life sentence with the possibility of parole after 12 years. Anthony Briley, the youngest brother, was given a similar sentence due to his limited involvement. Linwood and James Jr., however, were given death penalties and sent to what officials proudly called an escape-proof prison. Well, why would they be in an episode on prison escapes if they didn't do that? So, you know what happens next. On May 31st, 1984, Linwood, James Jr., and four other death row inmates escaped from Mecklenburg Correctional Center in Boydton, Virginia. It all started when the inmates rioted and attempted to overpower the guards. As the guards fought to maintain control, a call came in that a bomb had been found. The prison immediately called a transport van to take the bomb away from the prison to avoid injuring the prisoners. How a bomb would have gotten into a prison, I don't know. And look, and here's the thing. Like, sure, prisoners get all kinds of contraband into the prison. Maybe prison officials thought that over time, prisoners had somehow obtained the pieces to make a functional bomb. Who knows? But while this is all going on, the transport van is taking this alleged bomb away from the prison to avoid injuring anybody in case it detonated. But when the van arrived, a group of uniformed men brought the bomb out on a stretcher, continuously dousing it with a fire extinguisher to keep it from detonating, because that's how bombs work. And within minutes, the men had placed the bomb in the van and climbed in, disappearing down the road. Now, in reality, this bomb was actually just an old television, and the uniformed men were actually the Brileys and the four other death row inmates that they had recruited to do this entire operation. And basically how it happened was, during the chaos of calling in the bomb threat, or the bomb sighting, really, the escaping inmates had actually overtaken the guards, stolen their uniforms, and locked them in a closet. And during the escape, actually, Linwood contemplated dousing the captured security guards in rubbing alcohol and setting them on fire, because he is clearly a terrible human being. Willie Lloyd Turner, a convicted murderer on death row, actually stepped in to be this ironic voice of reason, which, like, it's weird when, like, a death row inmate who is also a convicted murderer has to step in and be like, hey, we don't need to kill these people, even though we are, in fact, killers ourselves. That is just weird. He convinced the Brileys not to do it to these guards. However, maybe he thought that, like, being able to tell this story later, he would be like, everybody would be like, oh my gosh, he's rehabilitated, he's this really good guy, we'll just let him go free. No, he ended up getting executed on May 25th, 1995. Wilbert Lee Evans, who was on death row for murdering a sheriff's deputy, also had to prevent Linwood from raping a female nurse during all of this. Like, Linwood Briley, just one of the worst people, for sure. Despite pleas for clemency from the guards, though, for preventing this nurse from getting raped, Evans was also executed on October 17th, 1990. Since Linwood apparently just wasn't allowed to have any fun during his prison escape, he and the other five men just left the prison. The original plan for this escape called for all six men to escape to Canada. After splitting up shortly after the escape, two were captured the following day at a laundromat. Two others, Lem Davis Tuggle Jr. and Willie Leroy Jones, made it as far as Vermont before being captured. The Brileys went their own way and stopped in Philadelphia to stay with their uncle, but the FBI found them 2 weeks later and took them back to prison. Linwood's execution was quickly streamlined, and he was fried in the electric chair on October 12th, 1984, which was, 4 months later, which is, I love the efficiency. See, here's the thing. We don't have to go through all this red tape if we don't want to. Like, people don't need to spend decades on death row. We can send people to the front of the line pretty easily if we wanted to. I just don't know why we don't. It's just so silly. But James Jr. was also executed a few months later on April 12th, 1985. Our next story here of Pascal Payette, who, he just enjoyed committing crimes. He was just a terrible person. It started in 1988 when he was arrested for aggravated assault. 5 years later, he was charged with conspiracy. And then in 1997, he was part of an attack on a Banque de France armored car in which a guard was killed. He was finally arrested for that crime 2 years later. So, after serving a couple of years in prison, on October 12th, 2001, Payette escaped from the prison in Luynes, France. I'm assuming I'm saying that right. I don't know. After his accomplice, Frederic Impoco, hijacked a helicopter and used it to break Payette out. On April 14th, 2003, Payette organized another helicopter escape from the same prison after he had already been rearrested and thrown back in, with two other men. And somehow, this is what's weird. Like, he quickly gets rearrested, recaptured, thrown back in prison again. So, like, despite being really good at, like, somehow obtaining helicopters, which, granted, maybe helicopters are really easy to obtain. I don't know. I've never tried to just go find a helicopter. I don't, maybe you can rent one. It's pretty easy. I don't know. However, like, because even though he had all these cases, he was still really easy to capture and get put back in prison. So, in 2005, Payette was arrested for the murder of, the guard during his, 1997 attack. Once again, he was apparently shocked that a prison system wouldn't exactly treat him well after he had tried and successfully escaped twice already. He wrote blog articles complaining about the way he was treated and noted that he had been transferred to 9 different prisons over the last few months. Because of his escapes, of which he was given an additional 13 years in prison, the French prison system never let him stay in a single place for more than 6 months and often kept him in solitary confinement. Despite all of that, Payette organized another prison escape on Bastille Day on July 14th, 2007, when he convinced 4 masked men to hijack a helicopter from the Cannes-Mandelieu airport. A chopper quickly took him from solitary confinement in Grasse and dropped him off at the Mediterranean coast in Brignoles. He was captured 3 months later because, again, like, here's the thing. Like, I think probably part of him just enjoyed escaping from prison and trying to figure out how to do it, because otherwise, like, you go through all of this trouble to get helicopters and coordinate people to hijack said helicopter, land said helicopter in prison, and like take you out. You think you go through all that effort, you'd probably go through an equal or larger effort to not get caught. Maybe. I don't know. Either way, he was captured 3 months later in a suburb of Barcelona. This time, French authorities didn't even tell him what prison he was being sent to so that he couldn't tell people on the outside where to come get him. Granted, like, unless he's in solitary confinement 24/7, he could just ask other inmates where he is. So that's, like, I don't know, it seems like a pretty loose plan. Anyway, he's still allegedly in prison today and hasn't made any other escaped attempts. Our final story here is of Radovan Krasier, where following the Velvet Revolution in 1989, he decided to live a life of crime, which was especially convenient since there wasn't a communist government around anymore to watch his every move. He quickly founded a company and participated in the Czech Republic's voucher privatization program, in which citizens were given the opportunity to invest in new companies. And so, again, to give you a little more context in case you couldn't pick up on it, Velvet Revolution in 1989, communism in the Czech Republic falls apart, new capitalist government comes in, and people are trying to start their own businesses and start building up a life for themselves. And one of the things that the Czech Republic's government did was they introduced this voucher privatization program, and people could purchase these vouchers, which were the equivalent of investments, stocks in different companies. Police immediately became suspicious that Radovan was involved in illegal money transfers, but struggled to obtain enough evidence to do anything about it. So this dude, he's already gamed this voucher program. He started a bunch of companies, like fake companies, and gotten people to invest in them somehow. Like, I don't know how exactly it works, but you get it, right? Finally, in 2005, police raided his villa in Chernošice, some Czech word, on allegations that he was planning to murder a customs officer. Thanks to the incredible wealth that he had amassed during the 1990s from gaming this voucher program, Radovan easily fled the villa with his family and just completely disappeared. 3 months later, Interpol, which is like this international police organization that like tracks down criminals, they found evidence that he was in the Seychelles, which is an isolated group of islands east of Africa in the Indian Ocean, like just a real isolated place, right? 2 years later, Radovan sneaked into South Africa under the name Egbert Jules Savi, which doesn't sound fake at all. South African police quickly figured that he was not actually named Egbert, that it was actually this international fugitive, and arrested him in Johannesburg. The Czech Republic immediately made efforts to extradite Radovan back to the country, but South African authorities denied the request, mainly because Radovan had already bribed the judge and was already had the South African government on his side. So with his freedom firmly in place in South Africa, Radovan basically restarted his criminal empire. He was basically able to recreate everything that he had developed in the Czech Republic. However, he quickly began disposing of rival crime bosses in the city, which then obviously made several enemies of him and his crime ring. However, Radovan, though, he's like practically invincible, which forced his rivals to come up with creative ways to try to kill him. So like this is turned into just this weird sort of mafia crime ring, crime syndicate war in Johannesburg. In 2013, Radovan was driving behind a Volkswagen when remote controlled shotguns popped out from the car's rear license plate and began firing at him. Like that's something you would just see like in those Bourne identity movies or like any other kind of like crazy action movies, just driving down the street. All of a sudden the license plate lifts up and these gun barrels come out and start firing at your car. It's just so stupid. Not only was Radovan not harmed, but he was well prepared for such an attack because he had then outfitted his Mercedes with bulletproof glass. And to make things worse for Radovan's attacker, the Volkswagen that the guns were firing from somehow caught fire in all of this. Following that assassination attempt, South African police realized that they had probably made a mistake in letting Radovan just go free and run his criminal empire. He was arrested later that year for the murder of Cyril Bika, one of his rivals that he had killed 2 years prior. They then sent Radovan to prison where, of course, he tried to escape on 5 different occasions. Well, on September 26th, 2015, South African officials raided his cell to find a pistol, a knife, a taser, pepper spray, 10 cell phones, a diary containing the names of witnesses and investigators who had put him in prison, and a detailed map of the prison because obviously he was trying to escape again. They also learned that Radovan had set aside $18 million to aid in his escape, including paying 3 of the prison guards over $1 million each to ensure a clean getaway. The plan was to have a team of 10 men storm the prison with assault rifles while the guards just let Radovan walk out. Other men would then start murdering random civilians around Pretoria, which is another large city in South Africa, to distract police long enough for Radovan to leave the country. So basically, like, he's gone. Like, it's just so extra, right? Like, at least Pascal Payet, he just gets a guy in a helicopter to come, like, swoop in and take him out. Radovan is planning this entire raid on the prison and then a separate, like, mass shooting of civilians in another part of the city to distract police from then responding to the prison. It's just so much. But that's what you can do when you have $18 million set aside for this. This entire plan would have worked, by the way, except an undercover officer had been part of this plan the entire time and prevented everything from happening right when it was about to get put into place. Radovan was sentenced to an extra 35 years in prison, and by all accounts, that's where he still is. There you go. A couple of prison escapes are in the books. Hopefully you have enjoyed this more calm, more dulcet, smoother, deeper, mellow telling of these stories. I'm probably not going to keep doing this because it was honestly very distracting. like part of me wanted to start getting like really animated and like yelling and all of this. But then I was like, oh, wait, no, the baby's still asleep over there. And so then, like, I started messing up words sometimes and tripping over things because I wanted to say something completely different, even though I had no reason to. I don't know. Anyway, What did we learn today?
What did we learn?
Oh, no. Oh, no. He's stirring. I think he's fine. I think he's gone back to sleep. Okay. Anyway, number one, the Briley brothers, specifically Linwood Briley. Terrible people. Terrible, terrible people. Murdered a bunch of people in Richmond, Virginia. And then in a gigantic prison escape, tried to douse security guards, naked security guards in flames, tried to rape some of the prison nurses. Otherwise, just escaped prison, but was captured and finally executed. Number two, Pascal Payet actually holds the world record for the number of attempted helicopter hijacking prison escapes. I don't know why they gave him that specific world record, but they did. So there you go. And then number three, Radovan Krejčír, organized crime boss, started in the Czech Republic, then rebuilt his empire in South Africa, was going to actually spend $18 million on this grand prison escape to probably just go to some other country whose government he had paid off, but it didn't work out. Next week on Our Weird World, as the baby's awake now. Fire, yeah, screw it. You know what? We're just full volume now because he's awake. I don't care. Next week on Our Weird World. Oh, I got to adjust the volume on this now. Hang on. There we go. That's probably better. Sorry if I blew your speakers out. Baby is crying. Let's tell you what's happening next week on the show. We're getting inspirational again. Part three of Amazing Tales of Survival. We've got five more stories of people who don't die in the end, or at least, you know, at least in the main part of their story. We're looking at stories of Charles Lightoller, Truman Duncan, Channing Moss, the Miracle Baby, and Joan Murray. He's crying. Gotta go. See ya. Bye. Do the things with to tell your friends and weird stuff. You get it. See ya.